wood-burning furnace onto Mr. Y's lawn and all over his house. And all winter long, he's in a little cloud of smoke because of the way the valley was built with the prevailing winds.
I'm not sure that...
This is a matter of smoke pollution. And I don't know how you regulate this or whether you want to regulate it, but I think that this may come up. And who's going to decide whether he gets his wood burning permits?
Any new stuff is going to be regulated by the U.S. and the Vermont EPA. I don't know as though anything could be regulated.
We talked about this extensively and how do you regulate this in a reasonable way for everybody, and we kind of backed off in this instance.
Well, if this came to the ZBA, I don't think we wouldn't discuss it. We don't know how to decide.
You wouldn't analyze it under...
And there's no guidance in the bylaws. I'm not saying there should be, because I don't know what the answer is, but I'm just pointing it out as a problem that I think it may well come up.
You wouldn't analyze it under a nuisance standard?
Maybe. It would be certainly be a nuisance for Mr. Y.
I mean, if it rises to the level of a public nuisance, it would be potentially analyzed under a nuisance standard.
Well,
maybe.
This has already happened, not with wood burning, but with open fires, okay? Several times in town. As a fire warden, I issue a permit, and sometimes they burn without a permit. But I had an incident in a valley where people were burning in August when the air was heavy and were smoking out the neighbors next door. And as fire warden, I had no authority. So what I did is I went and got the health officer involved, and he essentially has no teeth either. And you have to take it to the state environmental board, I think. But these are little things that happen intermittently. But this one kept happening. They just would burn with impunity. Because as a fire warden, I can fine them $25 and that's it. So it's like, oh, well, I'll pay my $25 and burn my fire. So, you know, again, so there has been a problem. We've had to deal with wood boilers in the valley I live with. And we had a wood boiler that would smoke up stuff. And,
well, right now, there's no provision here in the bylaws about wood-burning furnaces. Right now, as far as I can see, anybody could build one anywhere on his property. And he could smoke the hell out of his neighbor.
They do have to meet Vermont EPA guidelines if you're installing one. So,
yeah.
Whether you build it yourself, I believe, or you buy one legally. There could be potentially an avenue through, I imagine, the Department of Health or the somewhere within the Environmental Services with the state, that if you can prove that it's putting out beyond the legal amount of that appliance, that you could do something.
So the broader question here is... Should there be anything in the bylaws that say a wood-burning furnace has to be approved by the zoning administrator?
I don't think you can.
I think you'll find that any wood-burning furnace you can buy now has to be EPA-approved anyways.
That's right.
So that's going to cut down on a considerable amount of smoke. I won't say all of it. I can't cut down all of it. But anything that you buy new now is going to be EPA-approved.
I think there are two provisions in here, Alan, that might help the concern you have. There's a conditional use standard that applies to activities that would come to the ZBA that is on page 21 that says no visible dust or... It doesn't say wood-burning furnace, but I think you're covered. No visible dust or smoke or discernible odor beyond the property line is permitted. And then it goes on to accept a couple incidental agricultural or permitted occasional burnings. And then the second is a nuisance standard, which Scott mentioned. Right. That would be uses that are dangerous, injurious, or noxious, or that unreasonably and adversely affect adjoining landowners. Those uses are prohibited.
I think that's a difficult thing to enforce. If you go cold morning down into White River, you go to a cold reading,
everybody's stove is going, you've got smoke going in 40 different directions. Right. So how do you really effectively administer it?
That's where you have to...
It's very fact-specific.
There are days when there's a temperature inversion and you can see the smoke. That's one thing. Those might happen 5 days a year. There was an issue over on near Sugarbush Farm Road where someone built a house upwind of someone that had a house there for quite a long time, and they were burning wood smoke. And the way the winds went, it went right down into the house of the neighbor, day in, day out, not just when there was a temperature inversion, but every single day. And I believe in that case, the health officer became involved. And I can understand, because smoke is for those people that are allergic to things and air quality bothers them. Smoke is very, very uncomfortable for them. And so maybe something more should be said, but I can understand your concern. And if you have to deal with it day in and day out because you're downwind, it becomes more than just an occasional temperature inversion. We all understand those, but you know that's going to go away. You know, every day is another matter, and I can understand your concern.
The planning, if I could, again, try to put words in the Planning Commission's mouth, so correct me if I'm wrong, but the Planning Commission, when it comes to the standards side of the ordinance, this is just the other side of the ordinance from the process and the penalties. The standards side of the ordinance, which the statute gives towns pretty wide latitude to adopt whatever they choose, the Planning Commission really toggled back and forth between very specific quantifiable standards like decibels, you know, measurement of particulate matter in the air, as opposed to a more general and, you know, necessarily subjective standard. And they went with the latter. And so Woodstock's an example. They have lengthy and very numeric heavy standards about what you can and can't do that can be measured with, you know, expensive equipment. The Planning Commission opted for the more general statement, I think, to keep the document easier to understand and less technical and shorter overall. So you'll find that most of the standards, there's some room for debate, I think, because they are somewhat general. But am I right? That was the policy decision the commission made in expressing itself in this ordinance. And that goes for the smoke and odor provision and the nuisance portion.
In addition, there's so many standards in there now that if one isn't particularly strong, you can go to another one and bring them all into play. So that was the purpose of developing a good set of standards.
What else have you got, Alan?
I'm done. Bet you're glad to hear that.
Not necessarily. Public input is always important, but good. Anyone else have anything they wish to discuss regarding the town ordinances? Go for it.
I apologize. I know you've done a lot of work on this, and this has been going on for a long time. And I sort of wish I had come to your commission first, but anyway, I can't. And there's a lot of good things in here. I have a question. I have a concern about the setbacks and the side yards on page 10. I just wonder if Concord has a lot of open land, and somebody building a new house is going to be pretty obvious if two houses are seem to be too close together. And I just wonder if both the 20 feet and the 65 feet from the front of the house is enough. I know what that looks like because before moving here I lived in another town, and the town really had some of the most innovative planning and zoning regulations. And So I really know what setbacks look like. And it can make a huge difference. And right now we don't have, you know, big subdivisions here. But, you know, this ordinance allows that to happen. And thinking in the future, I encourage you, and I'd be happy to come to one of your meetings to talk about it further. But I'd like for you to take a look at that.
Definitely an amazing.
Should I be addressing you or?
No, we're all listening.
Okay.
We have to adopt the ordinance, but they have written the ordinance,
right.
And so I felt that they were more qualified to answer questions, and we encourage them to come. And if the ordinance needs to be tweaked, now is the time it's got to be tweaked before we adopt it.
I've got an ancillary question to add on to Nancy's is around the setbacks. A ways back, I sent you guys an email about whether the old interim setback bylaw was going to be incorporated into the new zoning regs. And I have to admit up front that I'm not intimately familiar with the old reg. But when we were going through, not to resurrect the whole settlement thing, but Purple Crown asked specifically whether, because that setback could have been beneficial, but because it had expired, it wasn't useful in that context. And so there was a question as to whether those setback parameters were going to be incorporated into the new zoning regs. And again, not knowing the specifics, I don't know if they are or aren't. But there was also a waiver provision in the old bylaws, if I correctly recall. And I wonder whether that waiver provision was also included in the new regs.
There is a waiver.
Is there? Okay, so that was brought forward.
And I think what we have here was almost a copy of.
Okay, so you did essentially incorporate. Okay. All right.
But these are the interim setbacks, not the original ones in the original bylaw. Yes.
These are the interim ones. For the rural area, yes.
Okay.
And the reason the setbacks were changed from the original bylaw was Phil Deckard was there was a lot of variances that came up on houses for porches and things like that, and so it was the reason the interim came into play was to try to cut back on the variances. And recently, Ben Kirchner and I drove down all the way to Hartford on a laser thing at night and measured distances from the center of the Pontford Road to houses.
What that range look like for someone being lasered?
They range from somewhere to 120 feet to 40 feet. So we concluded that no matter what you pick for a front yard setback, it's not going to preclude the fact that there will be variances no matter what number you pick, unless you pick something like 40, which does not make a lot of sense on a ZBA that the Pond Road is, or any of the other roads for that matter. You go up Caper Street, there's houses. We didn't go up Caper Street, but I guess some of those are probably 20 feet from the road. So I think the numbers are pretty good, but I understand your concern. And the other part of it, I guess, is that it seems though that even though these dimension requirements are in here, that most people in Pomfret, if they wanted to maximize the value of their land, probably wouldn't divide it in 2-acre lots. A lot of people would sell 20 acres or 30 acres or 50 acres, and so there doesn't seem to be a demand for the kind of housing that you're mentioning that Framingham, Massachusetts might have. So I don't know. I'm not sure where what we would change here. To be honest, what would you like to see for setbacks, for example?
I'd rather see 100 feet.
100 feet for what? The front yard?
Yes.
What about the side yard?
I'm not sure about that, but it should be bigger than 20 feet. Because if you have two houses really close together, 20 feet isn't that much.
Okay, I think
I'd like to research that.
The original ordinance, I think, was 90 feet.
It was 85 feet from the center road.
85 from the center road. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I've seen a house in Pomfret built recently, mm-hmm. and it had a much shorter, and it may have been just 50 feet, but and it's very noticeable in an area that's very wooded, and it's different than the character of the rest of the surrounding area. It's just one of my examples.
Yeah.
So I'd be happy if you...
I think it's trying to be consistent with the way the neighborhood is. You know, you go back 250 years in this town, and all the houses were close, reasonably close to the road. So, you know, this was the idea to be somewhat consistent between various segments of the town, et cetera.
And I hope that next week we don't get a subdivision regulation for 1,000 households. Be too exaggerated a bit. But... honestly, what's happened all around the country is that towns have changed radically. As soon as the area built, there was more population in the area. And it can happen here just like it's happened in so many other places. So I know there's a lot here that really recognizes, you know, looking at visibility and that kind of thing with landscaping. I think that's really the provision that prevents that kind of thing.
And this definitely follows the town plan and the spirit of the town plan.
Right, which is good.
I like keeping open space. And
I like the town plan. It's really good. But I couldn't resist because I was on a plan for 17. I've been involved in land use for 20. I was in the former place I lived, I was involved with land use for 20 years. But every community is very different, and this community is very different from where I lived. Which I love living here, so.
We have not addressed subdivision in this bylaw at all.
This is a separate subdivision.
It just refers to the subdivision. Okay. How it's being administered.
So, but even the setbacks, that would be the same, wouldn't it be, for the subdivision that you...
Yeah.
Spell out here. Yeah. So I'm just encouraging.
Except when you start getting into private roads, then that's another scenario that is a road that is not necessarily not owned by the town.
Right.
Then you have
that makes sense.
We have a provision in the bylaws for making amendments.
Yeah.
And if you had to deal with a subdivision, you could have an amendment specifying whatever you wanted.
How could you do it? Once something's proposed, I don't think you can write a new amendment.
I don't know what your question is. I think you can make amendments to these bylaws.
You can.
Yes, there's a provision in here somewhere.
Sure, of course. Okay.
In fact, I would say here, unless you determine there's something major here, that you go ahead and you approve it at the appropriate time, but if you determine if there's anything, then we pursue it based on an amendment to this to correct whatever deficiencies might be there. But you've got some great standards in here to protect the
town. I think what Nancy was trying to say was that, yes, you can make amendments to it, but if somebody files a permit today or the day that these are... You can't then make an amendment to make it so they can't
go through the hearing process.
Right.
But yes, I don't imagine that there's going to be any large scale anything going on in Pomfret that you know. So I don't think that's a problem, but I just wanted to make sure that the plan was understood.
So anything else, Nancy?
On page 12. There's a mixed use. Um, 2.4. I'm not sure what you mean here. I can't say I read this whole document thoroughly, but I didn't notice any other provisions or how this would happen or what you mean by mixed use. I'm just not sure what you intended to do with that sentence.
Matt, I think I may have an answer for you, Nancy. The way the ordinance is written generally applies to discrete uses, like this use or that use, and there are different tiers of review that would lead to an approval. It would either be exempt, which means you don't need any approval, or you get a permit from the ZA, or you have to go to a hearing for the ZBA. And it depends on what the use is that you're looking to implement. It would determine whether what bucket, you know, what process you fall into. This section talks about if you're trying to do two things at once on the same parcel, what process do you fall into? And it says that you have to go, and by designating a conditional use, you have to go to a hearing before the ZBA, the highest level of review. So in other words, if you're trying to do two things on the same parcel, even if they're both just needing a permit from the ZA, because you're trying to do both at the same time on the same parcel, you have to get a higher level of scrutiny and review by the ZBA.
I think that's what it says. I agree with you there. However, I am familiar with projects that can be 1,000 acres of mixed use. And if I don't see how you would manage that with only a sentence like that.
Hmm. Well, there's another article or two right here that
maybe
talks
I
about the conditional use process. Yeah,
but are there any rules or?
There's a whole article full of standards about conditional uses.
And where is that?
I think it's Article 5. And Article 4, which are general, but applicable standards for everything would apply as well. But the specific for conditional uses is number 5.
It's not in the glossary section of mixed use.
Sorry, 4.2. Nancy,
the
conditional
are...
use standards are in 4.2.
Well, there are some specific things here. But what if you had somebody that wanted to come in and develop a pretty large, 500-acre, 1,000-acre mixed development? This has happened all over the country.
After three lots, he's going to be a major development, and he's going to come under the subdivision regulations, and he's going to have to come before the planning board and do his spiel.
And if there's some kind of commercial or retail type of operation, then the ZBA gets involved. So there are provisions in here for a combined review process.
Right, but what kind of control do you have?
The biggest control is with the subdivision, because he would fall in a major subdivision, and then he's limited to three lots every 2 years. So most people wouldn't do that because they'd have to pace it out over 25 years to get it done. So the major thing for that is in the subdivision. There's a separate ordinance for that. And the reason we left it open there, we thought there's many requirements in the conditional use that it has to fit the character of the neighborhood and all of those conditional uses, that we thought the ZBA is, rather than specifically say what kind of mixed use, would be to leave it open. And if they thought that mixed use was appropriate for the character of the neighborhood, they could approve it. But to try to figure out pinpointing, Pomfret is so varied with the kind of people that have businesses at home and what kind of a use it is. And rather than get specific, we thought that they would make a better decision for
the local. So, do you think that if you got that you would have the power to recommend changes in a particular plan that
we're really getting into the subdivision area, which isn't far here, but part of our concept is for the applicant to come in initially and start to tell us about what his concept is, so that we can begin to work with the applicant on how his major subdivision is to be defined and whether that includes mixed use. Maybe it will be, maybe it won't. So again, the subdivision's not covered in here.
Even if it weren't a subdivision, though, Nancy, there's a long list of standards and conditions that would be applied for an approval could be issued by the ZBA. They have a long list
of boxes to check. It would be the ZBA that would...
If it's not, unless it's a major subdivision, which goes to the Planning Commission, it would be a ZBA hearing. But bottom line, there's a hearing involved and a long list of standards that would be applied before a permit issues. And the ZBA could attach any manner of relevant conditions to ensure the standards are met before the permit's issued.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking 1,000 acres, I mean, you're talking Act 250 permits with the state and all kinds of things, so...
Yeah, I think the greater concern that I would have as a ZBA member is who has the time to sit down for that type of hearing. It's going to be a long hearing.
One thing about this is in 2.4, the term is actually getting defined there in parentheses. And what triggered is that there's different definitions of mixed use. There's mixed use within a single structure, but there's also mixed use within a geographic area, like South Montfort Village area. I would encourage the Planning Commission to move that definition to the glossary section and actually build out that definition a little bit more as to what mixed use means within this zoning ordinance. Because there are common understandings of what mixed use means. And if mixed use only has, for purposes of this ordinance, only has a specific meaning, then it should probably be called out that way. It should be probably defined specifically as it applies to this ordinance. We're talking about this kind of mixed use, not that kind. Mm-hmm.
Is there any one statute that you...
No, it's not a statutory thing. This is just kind of land...
No, but a statute definition?
I don't know that there's a statutory definition of it. There are kind of common, you know, in land use parlance. But I guess the question I have is, does mixed use for purposes of this ordinance mean both types of mixed use, or just this one that's specified in parentheses here? Because this is just one definition. Right. So that might be something to bear in mind, because you know you recall when we drafted the town plan, that term mixed use is in the town plan, and we struggled, as I recall, with South Pompa Village area and the whole concept of mixed use. So I'd be a little bit concerned about having the town plan describe and characterize one type of mixed use in the zoning regs talking about another kind of mixed use. There might be a little discord there. Something to keep in mind.
And around the country, mixed use is not always... it does not always fall in the subdivision world.
Right.
It's often it's a zoning issue. With cluster housing and all sorts of...
Any other comments on zoning rights?
I just have one other question. Do you mind if I ask?
Yep.
On... page 13. I guess I don't understand. Let's see if I can find where I found this. Oh, here. Under 3.2, the second paragraph.
What page are you on?
The waivers.
Page 13, waivers, 3.2. I mean, what do you mean by waivers may be granted by the ZBA as long as they do not result in greater than 50% decrease in any zoning district dimensional requirement? I don't understand what that means.
Answering this question. Anybody?
pick up?
I think it would be the, as I recall, it would be 50% decrease in the setback. And I guess maybe your comment is dimensional requirement, that you could do the waiver, but then you get into the, below that, the proposed development consistent with the town plan, consistent with existing development, cluster development, permanently affordable housing units. I don't know whether that's a state statute part of that or not. I don't know that.
To me, I'm not clear with that.
Mm-hmm. What, that supposed to pick up any quantifiable requirement, like a density or a setback, the ZBA can waive down halfway as long as the criteria below are met. And the criteria below are, in my opinion, pretty strict. So this, I don't know that this waiver section would practically cover many circumstances.
I don't even know what it covers, to be honest.
The dimensional requirement.
Does it mean
gets at any quantifiable standard, numerical standard?
So basically, what you're doing.
Some examples, because I, yeah.
Density. So there's a 2-acre minimum density or maximum density. So the ZBA could waive it down to 1 acre under certain circumstances, certain very narrow circumstances.
Basically, what you're doing here is you're paving the way for cluster development, where one can make lot sizes much smaller in one quarter of, a 50-acre parcel, and then conserve the other, say, 45 acres so that it can't be developed. But to do that, you're going to have those 3 lots in a much, or 5 lots in a much smaller.
I think this provision began its life as a way to provide some avenue, narrow as it may be, for affordable housing in Pomfret. And so this would allow, yes, cluster development. It would allow affordable housing. That's number 4. It would allow, that's really it. So just those 2 purposes. But they also have to be consistent with the town plan. Okay. So this provision doesn't have any bite unless it's what's being asked is consistent with the town plan and 1 of 2 through 6 is also met. Variances are very difficult, or they're supposed to be very difficult to achieve. Waivers a little easier, and so relying just on a variance or a variance standard to allow things like cluster development or affordable housing would make it virtually impossible to ever do either of those things. But this was intended to make it a little easier, but it has to be consistent with the town plan before it would be considered.
That's an area of
any other
questions? Yeah, I understand, but it could be very difficult to manage.
Okay. I've got a couple of questions. One is on the village district versus the rural district, and I think I'm reading this right, that actually in relation to industrial uses, it's actually more restrictive in the village district than it is in the rural district, meaning that industrial uses are categorically excluded from the village district, but only heavy industrial is excluded from the rural district, because the definition of industrial is both light and heavy.
Yeah, I think you're reading that right.
So I'm curious why, because that would mean that the town plan and the zoning regs out of sync with each other. Because one of the things when we drafted the town plan that we had to do, as you remember, Orson, we went through this with Two Rivers, and we had to allow for some industrial uses. And we basically said industrial uses in the rural district were category excluded, and only light industrial was permitted in the village district. And this says the opposite. And so that worries me a little bit.
I think we wanted to stay away from the heavy industrial. I mean, I actually was kind of puzzled by what is the appropriate thing for it. We obviously don't want heavy industrial. coming into town with large complexes, anything else like that. So,
well, I mean, if anything, the drafting should be the to be consistent with the town plan. It should be the other way around. So, in other words, the phraseology that's for the rural district, you would want to flip those around.
I can see why you would want it both ways, frankly.
Yeah, but the problem is that if you do it both ways, then the town plan...
No, I...
Yeah,
that, very that is contrary to the town plan. I'm just saying one could make an argument both ways as to having it either in a rural district or in the...
The town plan was put in primarily because Chris Sargent said we had to do it in order for them to approve it and the state to approve it.
Right.
We had to specify where it goes. We fully realized that the area in South Bromford is relatively small and there's no room to put it. There's an aquifer there and there's... no septic. And so we decided that all of the other part that we didn't want to preclude that, and if the ZBA thought that something made sense in the area, that they could do it. So,
right. I mean,
yeah.
Right. I mean,
and it is contradictory to the town plan. I realize that.
Yeah.
Maybe the town plan needs to be changed in that category, but
the town
certainly make the argument that, like, industrial is going to bother less people if it's back in the middle of the woods than it's in downtown Bromford.
The town plan allows industrial uses in the rural area?
It does not allow industrial uses in the rural district.
But they're allowed in the village.
But they're allowed light industrial only is allowed
in the
village. But you guys have it flipped.
Yeah.
So that caught my attention. That was
looked at pretty closely by the planning commission. Mm-hmm. What to put where?
Well, I'm just pointing out that it got flipped. So, take it for what it's worth. You're going to end up with a zoning ordinance that's out of sync with the town plan.
How do you know when light industry becomes on the border, not light?
That's a whole other can of worms.
Are there regulations about that?
You're probably going to get into case law and stuff like that at that point. I suspect. I don't think there's any textbook definition. The other thing, and I don't think this is anything for the Planning Commission to act on. It's more of a comment, but and this is of no cause of the Planning Commission, but we will end up with a sound provision in the zoning regs that is less restrictive in the village district, because the noise provision applies to all districts, right? Not just the rural. And we're going to end up in a scenario where we have a single property owner as a result of settlement that has a more strict noise provision in the village district. Basically, what I'm saying is that one of the promises that was made in settlement negotiations is that either by virtue of the zoning regs or by a standalone ordinance that the select board adopts, that we would adopt a noise ordinance, a townwide noise ordinance, one for the village district and one for the rural district. And that was basically a promise that was made, because the request was that all property owners be treated the same. And so that was a commitment we made in settlement negotiations.
Does that need to be specified in the stuff?
It can go either way, right? And actually, Ben may know the answer to this. I actually don't know the answer. If the select board adopts a standalone noise ordinance, does that supersede the zoning regs? And I don't know the answer to that.
I suppose, I don't know. I wouldn't know the legal aspect of it. But because they have a conditional use permit, you could probably specify something more strict in conditional use permit.
But the point is that we made a promise that we would, that the standard that we are forcing a single property owner to live by would become the townwide standard. And so whether it's by virtue of the zoning regs or a standalone noise ordinance, which the board can adopt on its own, that we would establish a noise standard for the village district and one for the rural district.
So in the document, it's 70 decibels, I believe.
Yes.
What is it in a village district?
It's 70 during basically daylight hours and 45 at night. So it's a, you know, and right now it may not be a big deal, right? But we're going to end up with the opposite situation we wanted to create because it's going to be more lenient in the rural district and more strict in the village district, which is the opposite of what we wanted.
Well, just for that one landowner.
Just for that one landowner. But we're not honoring the promise we made, and we're going to have to rectify that. Either by a standalone ordinance or changing the zoning regs. But I guess the question, and I honestly don't know the answer to this, if the select board drafts a standalone noise ordinance, does that supersede the zoning reg? And I don't know.
I would guess it would if it came later.
Yeah.
I go through the whole hearing process of the bylaw.
Exactly, yeah. And then but that's a subject for another day, I guess. And I'm sure you all struggled over this, but I'm going to ask anyway. I noticed, because we struggled with this in the town plan, I noticed that there were a couple of uses of what to me sound like Act 250 or Queechy test standards or nuisance standards. And I don't know what the intent of the Planning Commission was, but for example, I just saw things like adverse effect. I know that the magic language in law is undue adverse effect. And those have magic meaning, special meaning in the law. And I don't know what you all were striving for. And if you were striving for the undue adverse effect standard, then it might be missing in a few places, because I see the phrase adverse effect, but I don't see undue adverse effect. But again, I don't know what you all were striving for. The other thing that starts to echo in nuisance is I saw language around, I think it was reasonable use, is also magical language in nuisance law. But the enjoyment part is missing. So if you're going to evoke nuisance language, you probably want to invoke it all, which is the reasonable use and enjoyment of property. That's magical phrasing. That it's. So you probably want to use the whole thing, if that's what you were actually trying to do. And the last question I had was, I'm assuming you all vetted this completely with Two Rivers, so this is probably all good to go from their perspective, right? There's no... I just think back to compatibility with the regional plan and all that good stuff, and is there any risk that if these are adopted, we're going to find out later that, wait a minute, this isn't compatible with the regional plan? Anything like that?
Just by speaking personally, I don't think we made a major effort to talk to the environment.
Okay.
About 250 people.
I think Kevin Geiger, some of these definitions on light industrial and heavy industrial came from their
I mean, you guys know there's been some pretty significant cases recently in recent history in Randolph and Queechy where there have been battle lines drawn between local zoning and regional plans, and guess who wins? You know, the regional plan wins.
Two Rivers was involved pretty closely from start to finish. In fact, like John said, toward the end they suggested revising some of the definitions to incorporate the current draft of the forthcoming new revised regional plan.
Okay.
So they looked at this, and they did have most of their input was taken by the commission. And Joe McLean
Protected
it. And in fact, we flagged the undue or the adverse. That language he looked at specifically and didn't, I don't know if he affirmatively said it looked good, but he didn't comment on it.
I haven't talked to him about it, but I know he did look at it.
They looked at it too, or was had a bite at that.
Yeah. I mean, as long as you guys are comfortable that there's not any potential... if we end up in a situation where the regional plan says one thing and the zoning regs say another, that we end up in that kind of predicament. But if, it sounds like you all went through all the right steps.
Quite likely the regional plan will change before they'll change something in there that'll contradict us anyway before our zoning gets redone again.
Yeah, right. I mean, just as long as nothing major, right? I think that's it. There was some stuff about retail and home business uses, but I don't want to belabor it.
I think what we tried to do, and just a quick one in general, is that the Pumford has so many steep slopes in some areas, not too much flatland. There's a lot of variety in terms of the topographical features. And we thought that the best thing to do in a lot of this is to give a lot of the power to the ZBA. Sort of like an open textbook. When Artistry came in, they looked at that and decided that that fit the area. And so we, rather than too many specifics, we thought we would give the power to the ZBA with all of the conditional terms that we've listed, that it has to fit into the various character of the area, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that was kind of our thought on a lot of these things that have been brought up. But is that...
Yep.
So, yeah.
Any other comments?
I just want to caution you, everybody, that if you have waivers, and if you, I think I recommend that you be really aware of the fact that precedent. It really matters, so that if it's probably, if you make decisions on a waiver, the risk is that it's going to become the norm because of the legal rights of, you know, that are often, when it comes to precedent, legally that does matter. So I just want to caution you on that. So the way it's implemented, or the way you look at the waivers, I think is really important for that reason.
Anything else?
No.
I need a motion to adjourn this public hearing.
So
moved. All those in favor of that?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, can you turn that off and then we'll start?